Hello, and welcome to the Direct Line half year 2018 results call. My name is Molly, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions later in the call. You can do this by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you need assistance at any time, please press star zero, and you will be connected to an operator. I'll now like to hand over to your host, Paul Geddes, CEO, to begin today's conference. The line will now go quiet until we're about to start. Thank you.
By saying that, as you'll have seen, this morning we announced that I will step down as CEO next summer. As I approach my 10th anniversary, I think it's right to put a successor in place to lead the company in the exciting years ahead. Announcing it today well ahead of time will help us achieve an orderly transition. In the meantime, I'm fully focused on working with my fantastic management team to deliver the initiatives which I'm going to be outlining later in the presentation. Returning to the pressing matter of the day, our half-year results, and I'm joined by our CFO, Penny James, and members of the management team. And without further ado, let's kick off with the highlights. 2018 has started well, with good financial performance and good progress on our strategic priorities. After normalising for the first quarter weather losses, our operating profit was up, compared to a very strong comparative in 2017. And even including that weather, we delivered a good combined ratio. We continue to grow our direct own brands, and we're able to continue to reduce our expense and commission ratios. And Penny and I see further opportunity here. And this was supported by our strong balance sheet with solvency of 169% after growing our interim dividend to 7p. As we've shown, our model has given us resilience against market pressure on individual lines. The inherent diversification in terms of product, brand and channel gives us options in different market conditions. And of course, there's been plenty of commentary on pricing in the motor market in recent months, which Penny will address. The observed behaviour of the past few years gives me optimism that the market will continue to remain rational, but we are well prepared for a scenario where it doesn't. Indeed, the reiteration of our targets today shows our confidence in the strength of our diversified business model, our pricing discipline, and the good progress our talented team are making on the many initiatives we currently have in train. I'm going to come back later and talk you through those initiatives, but first I'll hand over to Penny to run through the financial performance of the first half.
Thanks, Paul, and good morning, everyone. Turning first to slide six, I'm going to give you an overview of the main features of the results, with more detail on the preliminary statements and the appendices to the pack. These are good results, particularly in light of the weather losses this year and the Ogden release last year. Just turning to the specifics, operating profit was $57 million lower than a very strong first half 2017. Normalised for weather, operating profit was up slightly. Freezing weather in the first quarter cost us $75 million, compared with just $9 million in the first half last year. Last year also benefited from a £49 million release in relation to the Ogden discount rate. While this year we made a £10 million gain on the sale of our Bristol office and had higher investment gains. So when you look past all the one-offs, how's the business actually performing? Well, prior year development continued to be favourable compared to our reserving assumptions, further demonstrating our prudent approach and resulting in a release of £30 million higher than last year, largely from the home and commercial books. In terms of current year profitability, we continue to make good progress. So overall, I'm very happy with how the business has performed in the first half. On slide seven, we summarise some of our key financial priorities, and I'm pleased to say we've made progress against each of these this half. We said 12 months ago that we had three priorities. One, to grow our revenues across the cycle. Two, to improve our efficiency. And three, to continue to deliver underwriting and technical excellence. Looking at each of these, on the top left, you can see we grew our own direct own brand premium 3.3%, with motor continuing to drive the performance. On the top right, you can see our expense and commission ratios are both down year on year. The bottom left chart shows that the combined ratio was 93%, or approximately 91% when normalised for weather, demonstrating our strong technical performance. and the result is a return on tangible equity of 21.8%, showing that we continue to deliver excellent returns for our shareholders. Turning to premiums on slide 8. On the left here, you can see the group's premiums, and on the right, the table shows the growth in our direct home brands. Direct home brand premiums grew 3.3% compared to last year, whilst overall premiums were down 5% due to the exit from Nationwide, as expected. Motor's growth of 1.9% was slower than in recent years, with lower prices and less shopping around. The exit from Nationwide drives the headline home figure, although own brands grew 0.6%. Green Flag, our direct rescue brand, continued its strong growth trend, up 13.3%, largely offsetting lower partner volumes. And Direct Line for Business grew premiums 6.5%. Turning to the loss ratio on slide 9, the headline loss ratio increased by 7.3 points to 62.1%, and the difference splits into the following three areas. The first is weather, which increased 4.2 points relating to the freeze claims in the first quarter. Our view of this loss has remained quite stable from our initial estimates in the first quarter, so nothing new to report here. Second, the current year attritional loss ratio increased 1.7 points, which is primarily a consequence of a change in product and channel mix as we exit from the Nationwide partnership. This is offset by improved commission ratio, so we'll come to that on the next slide. At a segmental level, motor delivered a 3 point improvement in current year loss ratio as it continued to earn through the strong pricing from 2017. With higher reinsurance costs and lower price increases in the first half of this year, profitability of the business written this year is more characteristic of 2016 than 2017, and will start earning through more substantially in the second half. The strong motor result was offset by higher ratios across the other divisions, which we'll come to shortly. Third and finally, prior year releases reduced 1.4 points, although releases remain significant at $207 million, or 13% of earned premiums. As normal, we conducted our large bodily injury reserve review in the first half. This is our biggest risk pool and has historically resulted in the first half prior year releases being higher than those in the second half. We still expect the level of prior year releases to reduce over time as lower reinsurance retentions that we've been buying in the past few years reduce the opportunity for reserve releases or strengthening. Turning to expense and commission ratios on slide 10. This is an area I've been very focused on with the ExCo since my arrival, and Paul's going to talk and give a few more details on this later. Starting with the expense ratio, though, in the first half, shown here in the dark blue, we were able to absorb inflationary costs and achieve higher end premiums, which has provided us with the leverage to improve the underlying expense ratio 50 basis points to 24.4% in the first half of 2018. The commission ratio, shown in the light blue, was 6.5% in the first half, 2.4 points better than last year. There's two parts to this improvement. About half of the improvement reflects changes to business mix and new partnership arrangements, which offsets the loss ratio movement we've just described on the previous slide. The other half of the improvement relates primarily to the impact of our partners sharing weather, current year, and prior year experience. Now onto the motor business on slide 11. I'll describe the market perspective in more detail in a moment, but on this first slide, the facts of our portfolio. In the first half, our average premiums were up 0.7%, but you can see from the table on the top left that pricing in Q2 became more challenging, amplified year on year by the rate rises seen in the second quarter last year after the Ogden announcement. However, we achieved our target loss ratios in the half, and with claims experience returning to our long-term claims inflation expectations of 3-5%. So you can see our more modest premium growth reflects our discipline to prioritise our target loss ratios over volume. Also, as many of you would read, the Ministry of Justice has recently announced it's now targeting implementation of the whiplash reforms for April 2020 some 12 months later than originally planned. All these lead to a less benign claims outlook in our view than we've seen over the past year or so. I'll come back to this in a moment. Turning to the good profitability actually achieved in the first half, motor profit was flat at $238 million. The first half last year benefited from a one-time release of $49 million relating to a new Ogden discount rate, which was not repeated this year. And after taking this into account, prior releases were flat. As mentioned earlier, the current year loss ratio was strong. Finally, at the end of December, we renewed our excess of loss reinsurance at a 16% higher cost, reflecting the change to the Ogden discount rate. We'll earn this through this year and next. We're pleased with the overall outcome and continue to look for ways to ensure that we're using our reinsurance as optimally as we can. Now, slide 12 shows what the market's been doing. Here you see the ABI motor premium data index for the start of 2014. The Ogden announcement in February last year triggered a sharp rise in premiums, which you can see in the chart. In September 2017, the government confirmed that it intended to revise the Ogden process and indicated that the discount rate might rise to between 0 and 1%. As a result, premiums started to come down, and this continued into the second quarter of this year. So what's really going on through these periods? Starting on the left of slide 13, this time last year we saw significant increases in claims costs from the Ogden announcement, on top of normal claims inflation expectations. And insurers responded by increasing premiums. Through the latter part of 2017, claims experience was favourable and claims expectations were falling as Ogden was revised. Premiums followed suit. During these two periods, the market responded quite rationally, we think, to current and anticipated changes to claims costs and showed healthy competitive dynamics. So where are we today? Well, moving to the right, I think the Ogden position is relatively stable, albeit the legislative process is yet to complete. Underlying claims inflation has returned to long-term trends, and the implementation of the whiplash reform looks set to wait until April 2020. Based on the evidence to date, we're optimistic the market remains rational. And of course, you know what we will do, which is prioritise our target loss ratios over volume, focus on cost management, whilst remaining committed to disciplined and targeted investments to improve our cost, pricing, and claims effectiveness across the cycle, and strengthen our competitiveness. I hope this gives a very clear picture of our priorities. Moving to home on slide 14, where underlying performance has improved with the combined ratio normalised for weather a little over 2 points better. Starting with pricing, where we were able to achieve price increases in the half, both in direct and the PCW channels, although average premiums remain flat as we particularly grew in PCW business, which is typically lower premium. New business volumes grew year on year, while retention levels remained strong. Turning to operating profit, which was $47 million lower at $21 million. Weather losses were $65 million before sharing some with our partners through profit commission arrangements. Normalising for weather, our combined ratio improved by about 2 points. We've been able to absorb the loss of Nationwide and expect to continue to do so as the last of the book runs off over the course of this year. Prior year releases returned to more normal levels in the first half, having dropped last year due to high escape of water claims. We're pleased with how the team's been able to absorb the exit Nationwide and continue to maintain current operating profit levels when normalised for weather. Now to our two other businesses on slide 15. Commercial delivered a good result, having incurred approximately $10 million of weather losses in the first half compared to none in the first half of 17. The commercial current year loss ratio was up 2.2 points, reflecting slightly higher claims inflation in its motor book, but broadly in line with the full year 2017. Prior year releases, on the other hand, were strong at $38 million, compared with $27 million in the first half of 17, as we continue to see good development on the property and liability books. But overall, the market remains competitive, but we've been able to get enough rate away across the portfolio to broadly maintain profitability levels. Strategically, we've taken another significant step forward with Direct Line for Business, which Paul will update you on in a moment. Finally, Rescue and Other Personal Lines profit was £8 million lower. Within this, Rescue was £2.5 million lower as headwinds on the partner business and some weather costs were partially offset by the strong Green Flag performance, underpinned by its new strategic plan, which is now underway, and we look forward to telling you more about this in the future. Other Personal Lines was impacted by weather and some timing issues on our reserving recognition, which should even out over the course of the year. Looking at the investment return on slide 16, total investment return was ahead of the run rate for the year, largely as a result of realising in the first half most of the gains we expect for the year. Net investment income was £7.1 million lower, primarily as a result of lower assets under management. As the construct of our balance sheet stabilises for our current reinsurance programme, we expect the trend for modestly lower assets under management to continue for the next couple of years. As you can see, the continued divergence between US and UK interest rates meant hedging costs remain high as we convert back to sterling floating rates. Available for sale reserves of £7.7 million were £72.5 million lower than at the end of last year, reflecting credit and interest rate movements and the realising of gains in the half. Given the expected gains profile for the year, we continue to expect to achieve approximately £150 million of total investment return in 2018. Turning to slide 17 on capital generation, going from left to right, you can see there hasn't been too much movement to report. We started the year with a surplus above requirements of £910 million. Solvency capital requirements remain broadly flat. Rising interest rates and modest credit spread widening all contributed to a negative impact on the value of our investments, as you will have seen by the reduction in our AFS reserves under IFRS. However, this was partially offset by a reduction in our technical provisions, which is included in our capital generation column. This totaled £310 million of capital generated in the half, a strong performance. Capital expenditure of approximately £60 million is in line with our expectations. And finally, the dividend of 7p for the interim is just over £95 million, taking our surplus at the end of the half to just shy of £1 billion. Now, on slide 18, there's not much news to report on dividends. In line with our policy, we've increased our interim regular dividend to 7p. As you know, it's our normal policy to aim to be around the middle of our risk appetite range of 140 to 180%. And as usual, the board will consider the appropriateness of any additional capital return against this criteria and in light of the business plans and results at year end. Finally, our solvency ratio on slide 19. After all this, the group's Solvency II position remains strong at 169% after paying the regular dividend and comfortably within the risk appetite range. Before I hand back to Paul, I'd like to close with the outlook and targets on slide 20. I've now been in the business for 9 months, and I can see that we can further strengthen our business by improving our execution and efficiency, and have a few specific topics in my sight. I'm confident that due to the investments we're making and by adopting a more disciplined and focused approach, we have a real opportunity to materially improve our efficiency. And this is key to achieving our 93 to 95% core target. As our investments in the business yield benefits, we expect to see a further rebalancing of our profitability from prior year to current year. Having rebased the regular dividend by 40% in 2017, we now seek to grow the dividend in line with the growth of the business. And finally, on capital, we normally expect to be around the middle of the 140 to 180% Solvency II target range. Of course, we maintain our long-term ambition to achieve at least a 15% return on equity. And with that, I will hand over to Paul, who will give you an update on what we're actually doing to achieve this.
Thank you, Penny. As I said at the start of the presentation, reiterating our targets today shows our confidence in our business model, our pricing discipline, and the good progress we're making on our strategic initiatives. So here's the chart I put up last time with our channel strategies. And over the next few minutes, I'm going to update you on our progress here. I'm then going to take you through the initiatives that will continue to improve the efficiency of the business and drive down our expense ratio. Combined, they will show that we can continue to make our own luck. So let's kick off with our biggest and most advantaged channel, direct. And we've got a lot going on to drive this channel. The growth we've achieved across Direct Line for Business, and Green Flag demonstrates that if you give customers a reason to come direct, then they will. In Direct Line, we had a busy first half, launching two new unique propositions on home and motor. And the new motor proposition was our biggest yet. We've removed one of customers' greatest frustrations and protected their no-claims discounts on non-fault claims. These two new launches takes us to a total of 9 propositions customers can't get anywhere else. We've given them to all our customers, new and old, helping deliver our strong retention levels and continuing our virtuous circle. Moving to Direct Line for Business, which has continued its profitable growth. This time last year, we said we launched a new platform to deliver bespoke insurance policies to small and micro segments. We started, as you'll recall, with a pilot on hair and beauty, and last time we spoke, we'd followed this up with bed and breakfast. I'm delighted to say that we've just released over 500 new trades, taking us to 75% of our target trades on the new platform. And we said that once we had that scale, we'd ramp up our marketing. So last week, we launched a national campaign showcasing the flexibility our product gives these small businesses as they evolve and grow. And we're going to show you that ad in just a moment too. The success of the DL4B team is in part due to working in new ways and demonstrates that we have the capability and agility to quickly launch new innovative products to meet the ever-changing needs of our customers. Then we come to Green Flag. We believe our challenger brand has great growth potential and demonstrated this again by having achieved another period of double-digit growth in policy count and premiums. Our marketing is focused on showing customers they can get a better deal by coming to us. We'll play you our latest ads in a moment. They target the 2/3 of AA and RAC customers who renew without much thought. We aim to wake them up by dramatising that we match the best things about their service and we can do that at half their premium. Service matters a lot in this market. Customers won't sacrifice it for price. That's why we give it so much focus. And as you'll recall, we've just brought in new leadership and brought the business together, not only in reporting lines, but physically to create a rescue centre of excellence to deliver this great service. And we've just approved the new team's plan to help realise Green Flag's full profits potential. We're going to be using many of the same agile techniques that have proved successful in delivering fast and affordable change for Direct Line for Business. We look forward to sharing more of that with you at a later date. Finally, process automation and straight-through processing I'm going to cover later as it will benefit all of our channels. So before we turn to PCWs, let's look at those ads, apologising to those on the phone who can only hear them.
Perfect.
So some bozos entered your vehicle.
Jillian, Julian, could have been anyone.
Him.
Them.
Marigold.
Anyway, you're probably thinking they wiped out your no-claim discount. But you're with Direct Line, and you're not to blame. So unlike other insurers, you can claim, and your no-claim discount's safe. I'll leave you leverage to it.
So you've started your business, flying solo, but you'll need a crew. Now look at you, making plans, networking, sorting IT.
$4,000 for a printer.
Need coffee.
You need more seats.
Time to find a real office and chase down those big clients, land them, make mum proud, celebrate on a school night, upgrade to swivel chairs. Now, what's next? When you make changes to your business, Direct Line keeps up with your world. Can your business insurance do that?
At Green Flag, we think the AA are great. After all, they've won bucketfuls of awards. They'll give you unlimited call-outs whenever you get in a pickle. Pickle. And they cover the whole of the UK. Very good indeed. So why is that so great? Because Green Flags do all of this too. And we'll halve your AA renewal quote. Green Flag. Common sense to the rescue.
Good. 3 more sales there, I can tell. The full year I shared our plans next on PCWs to move towards best in class. We actually start from a pretty good position here, and it was encouraging to see our Churchill brand start the year well, again proving that strong brands and propositions are also relevant to customers in this channel. But we recognise that great prices are critical in this channel, and that's why we're putting so many efforts into getting to be the best in class in fraud and pricing. We've delivered some good tactical initiatives, and our pricing team continue to make refinements to our pricing every day. But most of our work has been going on behind the scenes as we continue to build our latest generation IT capabilities. We're on track with the build, which is going well, and we're going to testing later this year to begin rollout next. These systems are designed to step change our ability to use internal and external data in a split second to return a quote, allowing us to improve our loss ratios or write more business. Our new pricing engine will make it much easier and quicker to develop, test, and deploy new models, all with greater accuracy. This allows us to better tailor our models to the PCW channel and also helps to step change our capabilities in market pricing. The same systems will also allow us much more product and underwriting agility, which is particularly important in the PCW channel. Separately, we continue to make good progress on our alternative pricing project, which will give us leading-edge capability by applying new data science methods and machine learning. We believe this approach will complement our existing model and will increase our competitive quote footprint at similar or better loss ratios to our main model. We are progressing well with build, again using agile methodology. And finally, on to partnerships. And again, here we are leveraging our digital capabilities. In the first half, we continue to grow our RBS home policy counts and have a pipeline of new initiatives to embed home insurance within the bank's core channels even further. And the digital capabilities we've demonstrated through the RBS partnership is also giving us a great opportunity to talk to potential new partners. Moving across to rescue and travel, here we're building a new travel system that's designed to enable customers to self-serve and interact with us day or night, offering greater support when they need it most. Again, this digital-first platform gives us a great opportunity to talk to potential new partners. And finally, on motor, where at the full year I told you about our new motor partnership with VW Insurance Services. And 6 months on, I'm pleased to say it's going well. We've started by offering 5-day drive-away cover to customers buying new cars from Volkswagen, Seat, Audi and Skoda dealers, and we're pleased with the conversion rates we're seeing. It's very early days, but we're excited about the future with these leading motor brands. Finally, on to costs. And as Penny said, reducing our expense ratio is a key target, and we are acting on it with a disciplined and focused approach. As we've shown before, we can deliver cost improvements in tough markets. And the good news is that we can see a lot of opportunity. Here you can see the 6 key levers we're working on, focusing on our largest areas of cost. Those on the left are mature and have already delivered significant benefits. And as we go further to the right, the future opportunity increases. Let's start with marketing efficiency. Since listing, we've reduced marketing spend by over 40% in 5 years, and at the same time returned our own brands to growth. It's not an accident this happened, and it's testament to the science behind our marketing, which means that the effectiveness of our brands is up there with the best in any sector. This team will optimise our spend by channel and will play their part in delivering the next wave of efficiency improvements. Next, moving to more efficient UK sites. Over the past 5 years, we've virtually halved the number of sites and reduced our annual rent costs by about 40%. A good example of this is our Bristol office, where we used to have about 1,200 colleagues in a warren of offices within a dilapidated building. We now have a new building that's half the size of the old building. Through offshoring and automation, we reduced headcount 20% to around 950 people. And coupled with hot desk in home working, our run costs in the new building are 55% lower. We also realised the £10 million profit on the sale of the old office, which you saw in the results today. Our bright new Bristol office has a real buzz about the place, and we're looking forward to taking some of you there later in the year. Next, automation and offshoring, where we've now automated over 35 processes representing tens of thousands of transactions every month. But we believe there are more opportunities here. And where we can't robotize, we'll look for opportunities to offshore. We now have over 1,500 people in 3 locations, largely providing back office services, but also some head office functions. Our benchmarking indicator offshore penetration is ahead of the market, but we still regard this as a source of opportunity. These are all good examples of how we've already achieved extensive cost reduction in a targeted way that enhances the business for the future, and we do see further opportunity across these. However, the final three initiatives could unlock the greatest potential opportunity, starting with cost, culture, and agility. Since becoming an independent company, we've made great progress in getting our people to care about costs and to remove waste. Over 10,000 of our staff now own shares in the company, which is a great motivator, and thousands have participated in our Ideas Lab initiative where they share in their cost-saving ideas. I recently gave a check for £50,000 to a frontline colleague for a simple idea that saved the business over £1 million a year. But there is much more to go after here. We've strengthened our central procurement team to work closely with the business to get better deals on third-party spend, which makes up much of our cost base. And as I said, we're increasingly using agile methodology to deliver change quicker and cheaper. But we still have much to go after as we roll out this more broadly into the business. Next is IT run costs, where we've recently signed a contract with a leading third party, which delivers significant cost savings from our new hosting and network strategy. Over the next few years, we plan to wind down and remove our mainframe whilst growing the use of the cloud. This is planned to give us flexibility in the future to deal with changing business requirements and changes in technology. Finally, our latest generation of systems is designed to enable much more customer self-service and straight-through processing, giving our customers easier and quicker service at a lower cost. The new systems are also expected to make some critical head office teams much more efficient. So overall, I'm pleased with the progress we're making on these new systems and lots of material progress on all our initiatives and a greater focus on cost. Before we move to questions, a quick summary. We've delivered another period of good financial performance and continue to fuel growth across our own brand portfolio. As you've just heard, we've made excellent progress against our strategic initiatives with an emphasis on cost and efficiency. And against that backdrop, we're confident that we can continue to deliver against our financial targets. There is a lot to do over the next 12 months, and I'm fully committed to ensuring that the initiatives that we currently have in train will further improve our efficiency, technical capabilities, and customer reach. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I will now open it up for questions. Right, where should we start? Let's start. Yeah, stop the right.
Just a couple of questions, first one is on website reforms. Do you think that the market anticipates the claim savings from these reforms and prices in advance? And is there a risk from that when the reforms are actually implemented, the government wants more evidence of these discounts being passed on? So is there any risk of double discounting? And the second one would be on this proposal from ABI and BIB about reducing the difference in renewal and new business pricing. So firstly, what is percentage point difference between your renewal and new pricing? And what can you give us a bit more color? How do you expect it to feed through your book?
Sure. So I think Whiplash and Ogden are quite different in terms of prospects and timings. And I think, you know, Ogden is well expected to go through. You know, claims are settling at the 0-1 level. Obviously, the impact this year is minor because it's basically baked into our insurance price, which you saw coming at 16%. I think the future Whiplash reforms, we've pledged that it'll be passed on to the consumer, and we just need to make sure we do that in a transparent and fair way, and you start with the start point at the right stage, and you measure it in the right way, and we, as you'd expect, given our industry position, are closely involved in those talks. I think the initiative the ABI took to be proactive on this issue of the discrepancy, the new business discounting, I think is a positive step. I think it's been warmly welcomed. We, for a number of years, have been paying attention to this topic and work within a framework that we're happy with, and we think it's really good that it needs an industry-wide approach to make sure it's a level playing field as the industry moves forward on it. Okay, yeah.
Edward Morris, JP Morgan. Two questions, please. First is on the commission ratio. You had quite a big benefit this year, both from the nationwide transaction and also perhaps from lower weather claims. I wonder if you could just isolate the impact of weather on the commission ratio and give us an indication of what you think a normal commission ratio is going forward. And the second question is on reserve releases. You've been guiding to these coming down over time for quite some time. how far are we in this process? And can you give us an idea of what we ultimately are trending towards in terms of reserve releases? So in 3 or 4 years' time, what do you view as a normal run rate?
Commission ratios first. I think we've come down by, on home, 7 or 8 points over the course of the year. And I think it's about half and half kind of price commission factors, so including weather, not only weather, but including weather, and half sort of the MBS side. The weather side, you're right, should also, all things being equal, reverse off a little bit. Equally, the MBS stuff is just probably over halfway through, so I think we're there or thereabouts, maybe a little further, but not, you know, not materially so. And reserve release is coming down, and we haven't specified exactly when. You know, we've been, you know, blessed, if you like, that the underlying performance keeps being better than our assumptions, which is a good thing and a strong thing. So we, you know, we're pretty comfortable. There's still strength in those reserves, and there's some time to come. I guess the point I'd make is the 93 to about 95% core reflects us being able to make that switch between prior year and current year. And the initiatives that you see in and that Paul talks about all drive towards us achieving that. So that's the way we think about it.
Andrew. Hello, it's Andrew Crean at Autonomous. A couple of questions. Firstly, you're clearly putting your foot down on costs more than perhaps in the recent past. Are you prepared to give any targets around or improve the targets around costs? And secondly, escape of water. Could you give us numbers, what the impact in first half 18 versus 17, and a general sort of update as to whether this is an issue which is has been solved?
Okay. Cost first. Putting our foot down. Let's go for working harder as an ex-co. So it's definitely an area of focus, putting a discipline around that. And you know, the business has made a lot of progress to date, but I think there's further it can do, and in this kind of environment and this kind of industry, we need to keep doing that. We are not at the moment putting numbers on that view. Again, it's within the 93 to 95 trajectory. You've got expense ratio path, so a downward trend on the expense ratios. It's all feeding into that. So at this stage, I don't want to put further numbers on it. Escape of water. I think the key is we're back on long-term 3 to 5% trend in home. So the actions that have been taken both in claims and in underwriting have kind of addressed the increased inflationary trend, and it's now operating back on long-term track, so back in shape.
Thank you. It's James Sharp from Citi. I had three questions from my side. Firstly, just on the Solvency II development, so as we roll forward to year end and you think about how you've modelled and captured some of the risk in there, obviously you've got the Ogden, which is reserved at minus 0.75. It's obviously going to be raised later in the year. So for the full solvency, will you actually switch that to 0 to 1? There's a different debate how that goes to the IFRS accounts, but I'm interested to know what the actual solvency impact would be when you recognise that at full year. And linked to that, we've seen a big decline in the PPO propensity as opposed to, you know, taking the lump sums. What would be the impact on your Solvency II ratio at year end on that basis, please? Second question, the motor insurance...
Oh, that's the first one, is it?
Yeah, that's one. I've become great.
Very good. One A and B, okay?
On the motor attritional loss ratio, so 320 basis point improvement in the attritional loss ratio at H1. You do mention the reinsurance impact on that. I'm just keen to get a feel for the actual underlying development of that attritional loss ratio, because pricing is up 1.1%, claims inflation returning to normal levels. Seems like that attritional is going to get worse going forward, at least on that basis. And final question is my favourite topic is the policy administration systems. Could you shed some light on how the pilot testing has been going so far, perhaps give us some data around customer experience and retention rates, and just outline what phased rollout will be in 2019 when that does go live, please.
Good. Well, I'll start with the fourth question, or three. So a pulse system, we're in build, going well. going into testing later this year, rollout next year, taking a phased rollout, probably for commercial sensitivity reasons. We don't want to give our competitors a sense of exactly how we're going to roll it out, but we'll roll it out to, you know, bring it on stream in a way that minimises risk and maximises benefit, and so you're going to have to leave that down to us, I think. But please with where we're at, going well. You can pin Steve down later. Okay. Is the coffee break, look into his eyes, but no, we're pleased how it's going.
And it's later in the year.
Well, as I said last time, I'd be really surprised. I mean, that's not the way the program's developing. You know, we did what we needed to do. I think, kind of, you know, in the light of experience of other people, the right time to pause and get things right before you launch systems. But we think we're on the right track. Penny.
Ogden. So yes, reserving at 0.75, minus 0.75 at the moment. Will it move at the year end? Probably depends where the legislation gets to, I think, we'll take a view on what stage we are legislatively and take a view on where to move in the range and so on at that point. Will it knock through to Solvency II? There will be an impact. Solvency II kind of reflects the range of possible outcomes a little more. So there are other loads in Solvency II that link to that Ogden rate, but you should see some flow through from that. PPO propensity, we don't automatically shift in line, you're right, you know, at the very low rates, but we don't automatically sync the two. It's such a long-term assumption that we wouldn't automatically shift it. And the sensitivities that we give around often are pure, if you like, they don't have a knock-on effect as PPO propensity. And so it should be positive, but not necessarily the same degree as IFRS. Motor efficiency. So you're right, you're seeing a strong uptick in the first half as the premiums from the premium growth from last year kind of earns through. As you roll that forward into the second half, you've got two effects. One is that at the growth level, the premium's starting to come down again as the rates drops off into this year, so that you'll get more of that earning through. And then the reinsurance costs step up 16% from 1/1. And it's a risk attaching basis, so that's going to earn over 2 years. So you're right, the second half, just mathematically, before you get to any claims, particular claims trends in any directions and so on and so forth, mathematically, the second half should be lower just because of the earning profile, which is why we steered back in towards the 2016 levels to try and give people a sense that, you know, of the level of we'd expect it to write at.
Okay. Right, yes.
Thank you, Dom O'Mahony from Exane BNP Paribas. Just the first question back on motor attritional expectation. You said in the statement the business you're writing in 2018 you're expecting to be at roughly 2016 level attritional loss ratios. Could you just confirm whether that's written 2016 or earned 2016? And if you wouldn't mind reminding us what that number might have been, that would also be very helpful. The second question is just on the trend in PYD, which as you said, you expect to come down. The way you describe the driver, it sounds like it's a purely motor issue. Can you just confirm that that is true, that there's no particularly structural reason to expect PYD and the other lines to decline, or whether actually there is a reason to think that? And then the last one on the investment return, some bumper items in half year, guidance for the full year unchanged. I was just trying to understand whether actually that's an implied reduction in guidance for the full year because when you strip out the bumper items, it's a lower number, or whether actually the bumper items are just a sort of an acceleration of what you would have expected anyway for the full year. I'm really trying to think about my 2019, I suppose.
No particular order. Trend on PYD, yes, the structural point is motor points rather than a wider book point. Investments, it's an acceleration. It's really an acceleration of gains point. The only ongoing trend point that I'd point out is the one that I made about because of the reinsurance profile, again, the assets, you should see a tweak down on AUM. So that bit is a longer-term structural. The gains point is phasing. Although I would just point out that, you know, given where property is in the cycle and so on and so forth, the opportunity for unrealized gains on, and so on, and that has to be reducing over time, I think, from this point. But fundamentally, that's the investment story. What was 2006? Yes, pointed back to 2016. I think we're running in the 78s at the moment. 2016 would have been in the low 80s.
Great. Yes.
Obviously, I don't know what claims will do in the second half, so I can't. You know, I refuse to be held guaranteed to that. But.
Couple of questions. Firstly, just going back to the question around the current year, given you expect motor to deteriorate current year attritional, what are the areas where you see an improvement coming through from here on? Maybe linking to that question, you haven't really said much about NIG this morning, as in how did NIG do within that 98 combined ratio, and what's the trend there, as in how do you expect that business to move from here? Lastly, also on the home business, could you update, actually home and motor both, the retention rates, how that has done half year versus last year, or last report?
I'm not sure I got all of that, but I'll attempt, and I'm sure you'll tell me when I get it wrong. Retention on homes, that's the last thing I wrote. Retention holding up really, you know, just micro movements rather than anything else. So really positive about that. And I think home, generally, we've been positive that we've maintained growth in IFMPs and what's in a pretty competitive market overall. So, but retention good. NIG continued to make progress. So continues to move in the right direction. Our premiums very slightly off, but profitability overall, a couple of points up this time, but actually overall we're comfortable with the plans and the direction they're going in. So we can see that as a positive future. And the last one was, I can't remember, I can't remember, if I'm completely honest.
Sorry, the attritional loss ratio, what could improve it from here, given motors going the wrong way?
I think the way to, you know, we're writing at a core that normalized weather is 91%. I think we've, the sort of the 2017 roll into this level of sort of, you know, supercharged numbers. So I think overall we're comfortable with that underlying run rate. There is a point at which you would trade, trade the excess into growth if it were, you know, at that strength. So the way you articulate it implies we're, you know, it's a problem, and I look at it and say that core is, you know, fantastic, and I'm very happy with the attritional. So we'll be very happy if we hold the home book profitability at the levels we have, with given the exit of Nationwide and the competitive market space, and we're very clear that's what we need to do. We think the future growth potentials are in the green flags and the DLCBs and some of the other investment areas.
The NIG combined ratio is sub 100. We're going to speak out. What we have said historically is commercial is getting two halves. NIG is below kind of group rotor targets, and DLCB is above. The nice thing is that DLCB grows from above that. We've been doing a lot of heavy lifting on NIG to improve its pricing, efficiency. We've got more rate away than claims inflation. We don't always recognize that quickly because we are pretty conservative initial reservers on commercial. So not all the heavy lifting is evident yet in the results. We're encouraged by progress with Neil.
Clears its cost and capital plus. It doesn't yet clear the target returns. That's the plan. That's the trajectory.
Good. Who's next? Right, yes.
Thomas Seidel from Bernstein. Three questions. First is on claims inflation. You said it's going back to normal levels. Does that include small bodily injury? Or is it continuing to improve? secondly, strong improvement on small bodily injury. How much impact is left on the whiplash reform? Right? I mean, originally we had 8-9%, I think, brought it down. How much is really left after those strong improvements over the last 2-3 years? And thirdly, on the home, how do you describe the pricing environment in home? You seem to have achieved good pricing, but at the same time you have to reduce the risk mix. So what does it tell you? What does it tell us about the price environment in home, please?
So let me have a go at motor claims inflation. Roll up your sleeves. So let's split out frequency and severity. The frequency story is a really interesting one, which is 2017 was an amazing year for frequency. And we said at the time we're not going to trend it, and I think we were right not to trend it. It looks like it was just, you know, one of those one-offs. It may have been a bit of weather, which is perfect weather last year, 18 has kind of has reverted, and it actually might be even a little bit above trend. We think that's because it was the cold weather at the start, and then hot weather, and therefore it causes everyone to drive lots, and therefore frequency probably will go slightly above trend in at the start of 18. So that's the frequency story. So kind of generally flat, but a bit down, and then maybe a little bit up. Severity, we think, is kind of probably at the bottom end of the 3 to 5 range, and that, as you rightly highlighted, a game of two halves. Accidental damage is above the trend, probably above the top of the 3 to 5. Bodily injury is probably negative, I'd say, Gus. And the bodily injury, what's driving that is probably lots of things. It could be everything from car technology to the previous Jackson reforms to Medco. That's a different thing to whiplash. The only symmetry might be is obviously lawyers may be preempting future changes in their business models. That's the only kind of thing you might have already had a little bit from whiplash, because whiplash benefits are quite different to the things which have driven it. So the only kind of linkage between the two might be lawyers' business model planning between the two. I think I'm right in saying, Gus, that'd be a safe bet. So I think if you multiply the two together, you can kind of see, we had a better than trend year last year. This year is probably likely to be more of an on trend year. Now, if you're interested in the pricing versus that in the market, it's kind of quite an interesting thing to observe. So if you take a 2-year trend, if you take the ABI data, strip out IPT, we think the market's priced kind of 6 to 7% on that 2-year period. Maybe half of that you can say is the real Ogden costs, so it leaves about half of it left for covering claims inflation. Therefore, what I'm saying is, actually, against that backdrop, given the positive claims experience in 2017, it's not, if you take a 2-year view, that's why we're saying the market's rational, because probably it's pretty close, we think, depending on how the market's done it, to pricing the real claims inflation observed in that period, given that great experience in 2017. I've nailed the motor answer now. That's good for everybody. Right, should we move on? There was one on home. Sorry, Penny. Yeah.
Home, I think overall market's flat. Within that, we think a lot of the market's getting rate away. Certainly we are we're ahead or there or thereabouts for claims inflation. What we're finding is there's one or two players, they're probably moving around a little bit, who are pricing lower and bringing that down. So overall market flat, but within that there's quite a lot of divergence between the players. I think we're pleased. We've managed to get rate away in both the channels, both the main channels, and we're growing in both of those channels. You're right, there's been some reduction in risk mix and AVPs and so on. But overall, we're positive on that direction, given that competitive market.
Yes. Right. Any more questions in this half? We're going to go to the friends in a second. Wow.
We do have a question on the phone line, calling from the line of Greg Patterson from KBW.
Greg.
Please go ahead.
Hey, Greg.
Could you just repeat when you talk about bodily injury, the severity points? I didn't actually get exactly what you were saying.
No, I'm saying, Greg, that as an average between accidental damage and BI perils, you get probably towards the bottom of the 3 to 5 range, which is AD running well above 5 probably, and BI probably running negative.
And you said something within the BI, you said...
I'm saying that the question was about linking, have we had all the benefits of whiplash already? And I guess I'm saying not really, because the plausible explanations of why BI is coming down are things that have previously happened, and whiplash is a different thing. And my only connection between the two is lawyers preempting whiplash reform to change their business models, which might be giving us some benefit today from that.
I'm just trying to understand. So the in terms of BI severity, small and large, what can you just take those two and just tell me what you think?
I think negative is what we'll say between the two. I mean, I think... But actually, both encouraging, right?
So yeah. both small and large are
yes.
negative.
Yes. All right. Yes.
Two other questions. One is if you just talk about the current year-on-year rate, you think the industry you are seeing, i.e., in August. motor. And the second thing, I saw an ad, I saw the advert that you had about guaranteeing on landlord insurance to meet any competitor price for the same policy. I was wondering if is there a, you know, how material is that? Is there a cost? Is there a gain? I mean, what's the story with that? I'm just trying to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, guarantees to beat we run fairly regularly. It's a sign of confidence in our pricing, and yeah, you know, people do sometimes claim on it, but it's. But we've got good experience of what that costs us, and we price it into the cost of the proposition. So, you know, we've been running that since I've been here, which is a long time, as we've established. Penny? Oh, sorry, this was the...
You on your average rate.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, listen, we are... I'm not going to give you an August update. I mean, I think what we're saying is the market is... you know, well, Q2 on Q1 from an ABI point of view is a little bit less steep in terms of reduction. We're still 1.1% on a kind of risk-adjusted, mix-adjusted basis. Listen, we're optimistic about the market. The market has turned left and right to claims trends pretty well competitively. We're optimistic it'll do it again. You know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking the question is about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, they announced the deferral of 1 year and the whip left, and the market had started in the second quarter factoring in.
Yeah, I mean, I
was just wondering whether there was a jerk back given the lengthening of the cycle.
I'd say no jerk, but and I think the other point is to think about how you stop dripping that into your pricing. Probably people would have risk adjusted the likelihood of that anyway because there's narrative about that. Probably, you know, get in Q2, and then it would only have been, you know, a 12th and then a 6th of renewal prices, even if you did. So I wouldn't expect.
So you didn't observe any shock in the last.
No, no shock.
Right. Thank you.
Right, yes, James.
It's James Shuck from Citi again. A couple of follow-ups. Penny, I was interested about your comment around the motor normalised combined ratio being, well, ex weather, I think you said 91. Obviously, there's a higher level of releases in that currently. But is that the view of where the underlying combined ratio is? So, you know, if I was to look through that reserve releases and then where the attritional would eventually trend to, so, i.e., is motor really running at a 91 kind of normalized level? And then the second question is on commercial. I'm just interested. Obviously, you've got big plans to grow commercial in the micro segment, and you've got small little areas that you're focusing on to begin with. What's the size of that addressable market and what's your current footprint within that market size?
Yeah, I mean, basically, as we said before, our direct type of business, which is, you know, a big business, 450,000 plus policies, is largely two businesses, which is a van business, which is like kind of motor, and a landlord business, which is a bit like home, and actually SME is a relatively small part of it. We think there's a £3 billion addressable market, which is us working trade by trade within that 500 and going, okay, this is likely to stay broker because of the characteristics. They've got, you know, that sort of business. It's their main cost, and it's very professional, and they want a broker. And here's a business we think of largely can go direct. So that's putting all those little slices together to get to the £3 billion. So that's the addressable market from the SME bit. And we have in our plans, you know, we have got, you know, ambitious growth from that working out. It's going to take us probably a little bit of, you know, trial and error to get absolutely on the gas because, we're requiring some behavioral change, but we're helped in that by other insurers actually going direct. And as we said before, actually back in the 80s and early 90s, what made Direct Line grow was other people getting, you know, was the pricing cycle and more than one person trying to do direct. So actually, our competitors starting to do direct and SME, we think will be helpful to reassure small businesses that it's an okay way to buy things. 91, wasn't it? Do you want to clarify the 91?
Yeah, I think I'd just point you, motor is, by way of the biggest book, I'd point back to the 93 to 95, I think. 91 permanently would be kind of pretty rich, and we'd be well under, I think, that 93 to 95 target range if we were running at that level permanently. So that's the place to look.
Good. Russ.
John Denham, Morgan Stanley. Penny, would you just be able to quantify the net impact from Nationwide for deterioration loss ratio and improving commission ratio?
It's not huge overall. It's more of a rotation between lines. So I don't want to give an exact number for commercial reasons, but it's not a huge impact on the operating profit. Hence the fact, with a bit of work, we can absorb that and keep some profitability landed.
Good. Last calls within an hour, which is excellent. Anyone phone? Excellent. No one's asked a question about me, which is excellent. So I take that as a few votes of confidence. Thank you very much, everybody. It's been great. I will be here next time. Nothing changes. And we'll see you then. Thanks very much.